there were huge ones. It wasn't like that. And as I say, the lower bracket was made out of the ceramic, the shaft was made out of ceramic, and from the other side was the similar thing like the spring, the outer spring. So there was no sliding contact until June.
This is a rather specially made device. What was the problem that this very specially made device was solving? Back to you, Wes.
They had a problem with the sliding contacts at the frequency over 400 megahertz. There was plenty of radar equipment and plenty of the communication equipment of the high power that was used here. And they tried to solve the problem this way. I was actually using some of that equipment, and I never had a problem with it. There was no single spark. There was never no single short. We were operating at the power of 1.5 kilowatt up to 2 kilowatts. From the first they used the number 80, it says 80, but was UL 80 or something like that, the big tube. And then they had a ceramic one. The ceramic one were good, and they were using also in R-137 and R-40, the Russian high-power radio stations. Enter it in.
That lower photograph of that very elaborate object, where was that used? What frequency, what power, if you happen to know, Wes, go ahead.
A different frequency. 137 operated from 60 megahertz up to 250 megahertz, if I remember. 140 was the HF that was working from 1 megahertz up to 60 megahertz. Actually, less than that, up to 30 megahertz. They had equipment also that was used for the communication with the planes, and that was working at 400 and 600 megahertz. In all of those, similar capacitor was used. Now, the one that you see in here is not necessarily the one that was in those devices. It's just the same concept. This one is made out of the metal. That's what they had, were made out of the ceramic. There was also the other solution that I have made. Two coils that changed the rotated. One rotated inside the other. That's what we were talking years ago. And to achieve.
That photograph of that variable capacitor at the bottom of the page looks to me like it can have an extremely large C max, C minimum ratio. I thought that had a very large ratio. Is that true?
That is correct. The distance between the plates, imagine that you have a capacitor that is 1.5 foot tall, similar structure, 2 feet tall, and the distance between the plates is about half an inch and 2 inches.
Now, if I was using that bottom device, and if the left-hand side of those plates is called the stator, and the right-hand side connected to the shaft is the rotor, and if I ground the stator, and now I want to connect the rotor to a resonator, how do I make connection to that rotor without using a rotary joint? How do I make RF contact to that rotary half without having any sliding or rotating contacts? Go ahead.
If you look at the drawing that I have made on the left-hand side on the drawing, and look exactly what is being called spring contact, conductive spring, that's the connection that I have been using. And do it here. It was a rigid connection. It wasn't rigid. It was flexible connection. It was no sliding contact. It was connection all the time. Only when we turn it at 90 degrees, the spring became tighter. That's why they used another spring that was the inner one that was made from flexible material but not conductive one to prevent from you to overturning it. And to
Okay. So this was designed not to have any sliding contacts. So they encountered that problem, and this was a solution. Interesting. So I think you're saying this was used on Russian military hardware, and I think you're saying you know of no evidence of anything like this being used in United States hardware. Is that true, Russ? I mean, West, K2RAW?
That is correct. I never met it in here, but I met it in plenty of devices over there. Everything was classified, secret whatsoever, and I was trying to find any picture of it. I couldn't find it on the spot. Maybe I find it later. But it makes a sense. And you're Jean.
On your drawing that you created, on the right-hand side, I see what looks like a bearing on the top and a bearing on the bottom and a shaft in between. And in between the two ceramic plates, I see one, two, three, four planar objects. What are those planar objects? Wes, go ahead.
If you think about the butterfly capacitor, that was another design that they used also using those springs. Butterfly capacitors, then you have a plate and then other plates, so you have you've shown the plates, longer plates that are rotatable, and the shorter plates that are rotatable, and longer plates that are static. Now, that's what you see outside on the top and at the bottom. Those are those springs, that the dual springs, where one is conductive and the other one is not. And don't you?
On the left side of the drawing that you made, there's a spiral-shaped object on one side, a spiral-shaped object on the other side, and a shaft with rotating plates. That shaft looks like it's at right angles to the rotation. Is that just a simplification of the drawing? You're supposed to make believe that all of that is properly aligned. Go ahead.
That's correct. It's a simplification. On the shaft, I supposed to put the plates of the capacitor. I also, next to the shaft, supposed to put the not moving plates. I didn't throw them there. All I did is just, I showed the structure of the double spring on the left and right hand side, which serve as a contact, and the shaft by itself. And you see it.
Okay, and thank you for bringing it to my attention. There's more than one way of solving the problem. This is a little bit more elaborate, but it looks like another way to solve it, and I thank you. I've got to go away. Bye-bye for now. See you guys next week. Keep your eyes up, you're clear, but listening.
Dick, you got a minute, and can we always go to bed?
Okay, I got a brief minute. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick. I take it on the parallel kilowatt that you signed. I think what you did, the reason that it didn't have to be push-pull tuned, because the intraelectrode capacitance of the two tubes together, you gave an equal and opposite reactance with the large strip line. Am I correct?
Not quite, Rich. So a very wide piece of strip line. If you take a look at April, I think you're a QST member, an ERL member. If you are, you can go to the archives and you can look at April 1972 QST. The article by RIW, and you'll see that the two anodes, external anodes of a 4CX250B, are both connected to this wide piece of strip line so that it acts like one single anode. It happens to be two separate anodes, but by that wide piece of strip line with the very low inductance between the two anodes, it converts it into one anode. Electronically, I find a way to make a 4CX250B that's twice as big as far as its plate area is concerned and its plate dissipation. And so each of those tubes are so well connected in parallel, I can completely turn off the filament of one tube, and that amplifier keeps right on cranking. It produces half the power output. It doesn't care if the tubes are matched or thoroughly unmatched. Over to you, Rich. At 2EO, K2RAW.
Okay, Dick, you know, that was a very ingenious design. Back 1966. I was on 6 meters, and I built a, they used to be the VHF handbook, you probably remember that. It was 3-2-4CX-250 amplifier, and I built that. And like you said, the problem I had, I used one disc supported by a Teflon rod. The other disc was on a brass screw, and I had a brass nut soldered to a chair bush. It worked, but the problem was I got a lot of sparking and arcing on that chair.
Yeah, you've encountered the exact problem that I wanted to avoid. The sparking and arcing, the irregular tuning, and the sometimes welding, and the stick and slip of that welding process. And by the way, when you operate that tube for a significant period of time with any amount of tuning, and you turn it off and look at it, you will see blackening of that brass shaft, where the shaft goes through the nut. So that mechanism of tuning is quite undesirable, and so this flopper capacitor approach solves it, I think, in a very simple way, but fairly elegant in that it has very low inductance because the flopper capacitor is very wide. It has very high voltage because it's got nothing but air between the plates, and yet you can change the spacing between the plates by pulling on a piece of fishing string. So it solves the problem in a way that quite a few hams were able to reproduce. Some of them had some trouble because there was a missing dimension in the drawing in the book. Over to you, Rich, K2LAW.
Okay, Dick, when you have more time, I'd like to know how you developed that amplifier. I can't believe you just built it and fired it up. You know, the 6 meter kilowatt I built, it was 3 tubes, 4CX250. I was only 16 years old when I got my license the year before. So I didn't know that much, but it worked. It worked fine. I built it from mostly from Corporate Street.
Because Hank Keane, W2CTK, one of the guys who invented strip line, was such an extremely good teacher, because that strip line was very wide, 3-inch ground plane spacing, tri-plate strip line, they call it, upper ground sheet, lower ground sheet, and then the resonator in between. He was such a good strip line teacher. He found all kinds of ways of making complicated mathematics simple. I calculated that ahead of time, and you could say it almost worked the very first day. The only problem I had is I wanted it to tune to 432, and the very first time I built it, it was on 432.5. I had to shorten the plate a little bit. Oh, it didn't wear it. It was a 431.5. It was a tiny bit low. I had to shorten the resonator by chopping off an eighth of an inch of its 6-inch length or whatever it was. So it almost worked right out of the box, Rich. Amazed the hell out of me. I was afraid to turn it on full blast at first, and I would slide the top cover off a little bit and stick the knob of a, I'm trying to think of now, the grid dip oscillator. There was a grid dip meter that went to 900 megs. B&W, I think, was the brand name. And I remember sticking that in there to find out what frequency it was resonating on. And it was a 431.5 instead of 432. Very minor error on the plate circuit. And the grid circuit was also a tiny bit on the low side, because the real equivalent capacitance of the grids of those tubes is a little bit long, a little bit higher than you think. Let me drop. Because the grid pin that you connect to is not at the screen grid. There's a length of rod that goes from that grid pin into the actual control grid. And that length of rod has a little bit of inductance. Therefore, the equivalent capacitance of those plates at 432 of the control grid, the equivalent capacitance, is a little bit higher. When IMAC told you the capacitance of the control grid, that capacitance was measured at 100 megahertz. If you measure that capacitance at 432, it appears to be higher. And I discovered that real fast. So it came very close. From the time I first finished building it until I was getting significant power output was a couple of hours. Over to you, Rich, K2LIW.
Okay, Jake, I remember a company, I think their name was Arco. They came out with a version of your amplifier. I think they used a 52. I'm trying to remember, was it 8950? And they made them also for 2 meters. Are you aware of that?
Two separate companies. Arco's Amateur Radio Component Service. That was the guy in Upper New York State. Can't think of his call letters right now. He's a silent key. He was building them for quite a number of years. And then Steve Polish at K1FO. Can't think of the name of his companies right now. Steffens. His first company was Steffens. He was building these things with 8938 triodes. He used a high power triode instead of a tetrode. And so he was building them, and he's also a silent key. Just think about that. Everybody who builds parallel kilowatt amplifiers, except for the original author, they all become silent keys. Over to you, Rich.
Yeah, it's too bad. I know Steve when he was WA1FFO, and then WA1K1FO became available. He took that. He died years ago. His wife took over the company, and then she sold. It's called Wunderlink. And Barry at 2MB is going to buy a 2-meter amp from Wunderlink. He wants to buy it without the tubes and without the power supply. Because he got them from you.
That's a roger. Okay, Wunderlink is the name I couldn't think of after Steffens. And yes, WA1FFO, K1FFO, K1FO. I've got to go. Bye-bye for now, Rich. And see you down the log. K2RAW.
K2RAW, KD2CBV.
Go right ahead, sir.
I just wanted to say, Dick, thank you so much, and I really appreciate it. And have a great evening, get some sleep, and have a good week.
There's a man with good taste. Bye-bye.
Dick, can I have anything from Peter on all night now?
I don't know.
Okay, look, you get some sleep. I'll see you later. But you know what? You're quite a gifted guy. K12IW and 2EO.
Yeah, it's possible the clock is still on Eastern Standard Time instead of daylight. Bye-bye.
Visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active. Tonight at 8:30, welcome to the W2VL repeater.
Are you listening? United.
the Jewel of Denial.
Look at you, all the way up there.
Yeah. Figured I'm up already, might as well get out.
I always look at it this way. Why do today what you can put off till tomorrow?
Well, I was awake, so I got out of bed. The alarm clock never rang.
Oh, that's good. It's better to keep it from ringing.
Yeah. Decided not to bring the DMR with me, because at this hour, I'd be almost to the tunnel by the time people started coming on.
Okay. And it's not like you could carry on a conversation once you'd be on the other side of the tunnel, right?
I got at most 5 minutes in Manhattan before I'm parked, especially at this hour.
Okay.
I also try to avoid having microphones inside Manhattan, because I did get pulled over once for doing that.
But you flashed them your American Dental Association credentials and they let you go, right?
You kid about that, but it was my license plate that got me off.
Told them you were talking by your new handy dandy ham radio back to the office to make sure that the patient was getting treated right?
He said I was on his cell phone. I said, nope, cell phone's in the pocket. There's a Bluetooth over there. I said, and what's this? And he pointed to the microphone. I said, that's an amateur radio licensed by the federal government.
That's like the radio on your belt.
And then there was a discussion as to whether it was covered by the cell phone law, and this particular officer didn't like having anyone explain the law to him. And I said, oh shit, this guy's going to write the ticket. And then he said, you're lucky I don't like giving tickets to guys in your profession. And he threw my license and registration back at me and then walked away.
You got away lucky there, potty mouth.
Oh yeah. That's why once I hit that tunnel, I put the mic down because there are too many cops around.
Okay. Alright, I'm just about to get on to the watcher.
You know, you had said that there was construction that was going on the Jackie Robinson or thereabouts. Has that affected you, changed
going in, there's nothing going on. It's the coming home time that sometimes gets messed with.
Okay. Well, how long do they expect that project to go on?
Well, it looks like they're running a big main sewer line down South Ave. So, it could be another couple of weeks, because they closed up one section and now they moved further to the west. So they'll eventually reach a point where I guess they'll connect back into whatever it is they need to connect back into, and then they'll close everything up and then hopefully do a nice pave job.
You notice that word you use, hopefully.
For right now, it's totally unacceptable. It's obvious, just, it's, you know, patched. But we'll see what happens and how long that takes. But I assume before too long, everything will be all cleaned up and that'll be back to its lovely self in commutability.
time yesterday, every few hours, I would take a look and see, all right, what's the weather forecast for Monday now? Because they kept on changing it. And they kept on downgrading it, downgrading it, downgrading it. And, get up this morning, I take a look out the window. Oh, I can see the sidewalk. It's not that bad.
And 2PPN Mobile.
Oh, yeah. That's good. I took a little peek out, too, saw that the paved surfaces were clear. Little Sheedy, who must be feared and obeyed, went back up to school yesterday. So luckily, she didn't have to deal with any of this at all on her drive back up.
Are they going to get hit with this today? Because it looks like this thing's mainly out to sea because Suffolk's getting slammed, and we're not.
Not at all. Not at all. They've had enough snow up there. They don't need any more. This whole storm came up out of the south, and it was tracking to the northeast. So there is no way any of it's getting anywhere near her. So she made it back up in normal time. Everything was good. The White Wonder, Walter, the White Wonder ran fine all the way up, and no problems. I put a new battery in it when it was home, so no more problems with dead batteries in the sub-freezing temperatures. And I said, as long as I was doing that, I did a few other little things, new fuel filter, and we'll keep tweaking along. Keep tweaking along. And 2PPN.
And 2PPN and 2ZEP. I didn't know she had a problem with the battery. She could have told me that.
Well, the battery was old. And everything, you know, tested good on it. But apparently, she had left her dome light on or something at some point or another up at school. And she had to get jumped. And the fact that she never ran the car for any serious length of time to get the battery charged back up fully, and the fact that it was like, you know, minus 24 degrees up there, the battery never really fully recovered. I mean, once it was down here in warm temperatures, there was no problems with it, but I didn't feel like taking a chance of having that phone call of, Dad, I had to get the car jumped again. So simpler to just, you know, throw a brand new battery in it, and everything is good.
Yeah, it never hurts. What is it, new battery for cars nowadays, what, $100? It's worth it.
Yes, yes. And then I was trying to track down a, errant check engine code that would come up from time to time, and I've been doing some research, and one of the things that said that could cause it is a dirty fuel filter. So while I had the car opened up and whatnot, I said, you know, let me throw a new fuel filter in it. So did that also. Couple of cans of seafoam in the gas tank, and we'll see if the light comes back on over the next couple of weeks before she comes home again.
Not familiar with seafoam. Is that a, it's not a carburetor, more a fuel injector cleaner?
It's a dessert topping.
It's a floor wax.
Sir, it's a floor wax.
Yes, sir. Give it to Ian, QN. On the way.
Take a full turn.
Take a full turn? Okay, good morning. So much for the big
know, there's just so many of these, like, cerebral things going on. That whole thing with Ernst, we pegged it right from the beginning. With Ernst isn't alive.
Yeah, he was a little too weird and, like, too removed from what was happening. But another interesting dilemma in his head, obviously. You know, at first I thought it was like Liberace, but I said, no, he's not that sleazy and he's too young. Too young, so I'm like, who played like that?
I guess we'll find out in the upcoming episodes.
You know, the guy in the music store who that was supposed to be, when he runs away with the guitar?
No, I might have missed that. Who's that supposed to be? Johnny Rotten?
No, that was Mick Ronson. Mick Ronson.
Oh, okay. So now I guess we'll see how that all plays out with the bits.
Go ahead, Gary. Gary wants to know what Seafoam is.
What happens when the Flotsam and the Jetsam get together? Shoreline.
You guys continue to talk about your TV shows. I'm at the tunnel. 7-3. Speak to you later in the weekend. 2ZEP.
Isn't it sad that he doesn't watch our stories with us?
It's not going to hurt me. 7-3. Have a good one. Boy, he got in quick. 6 o'clock.
He didn't tell you that he left the house at 4:30.
My plumber's not here already today. Okay.
The house, the toilet stuff. Enter PPN.
That looks like both plumbers are in it. Okay. Yeah, we're going through the, you know, the hamster cage again. Is the infection happening? Is the panic will start again this morning.
What are they having, like a plunger convention? Your two plumbers are getting together?
Yeah, they're two DBs, so off of the course.
What's that? About 36 strokes, 72 strokes?
Yeah, well, they don't get it, but I don't really care, to tell you the truth. Anyway. So, yes, that was interesting, and I was awake enough to watch Billions also.
I went in and made my dinner. I went in and made my lunch for today when Girls came on. So, I think I wound up watching or waiting to watch Elementary while I was putting the coffee together and my, you know, tuna fish on rye and all that stuff.
I like Billions too, but Sherry stayed over because the housekeeper is coming this afternoon. I don't want to have to deal with whatever mess was happening here, and she could barely get here on a clear day, but you could see forever. So Sherry was with me, so we watched that. I wasn't able to do my usual Walking Dead vinyl at the same time gig. And I'll have to catch up with Shameless later in the week.
So what did you think of Olivia Wilde?
She's nice. She's very nice.
Skinny and nice.
Nice and skinny.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. I was like, huh?
She likes driving that station wagon around a lot.
Yes, she does.
Is that a Ford Fairlane? Did you see the trailers for the, for Andrew Dice Clay?
No. Is his head bashed in?
No, he's going to have his own show.
I've seen some print ads.
billboard or two in the city, but I haven't really paid attention to go looking for the trailers.
Yeah, it looks, you know, like your dice vehicle. It's, you know, I gotta say this about the guy. For being blackballed, he's been slowly getting back in the game. He's appeared in a number of films. You know, he's been blackballed for 20 years.
Yeah, about that. All of a sudden, I mean, when he showed up in Vinyl, I'm going, holy moly, I said, that's Dice Clay.
But he was doing little spots in Entourage also, I don't know if you remember. And a couple other of those series. He's good for that, you know, he's got a character. Plays usually the crazy, loudmouth producer or something like that.
Yes. Yes, the crazy, loudmouth, boisterous presidential candidate. Oh, wait, that's somebody else.
Yes, that's a horse of a different color.
Take that for a carriage ride around the city of Oz.
Oh, look at this sign over here by exit 32. Graffiti is crime. Call 911.
He must have a rampant rash of graffiti that they're going to try and get the public to dime them out. And to PPN at Gimme Shelter Rock Road.
TJC.
Go ahead, enter and sign in, please.
Hey, CTTJC, what's going on, fellas? How's everything?
Everything's great, JC. And yourself?
I, of course, have a technical question for Steve.
And if he answers it, I'm going to smack him in the back of his head.
Don't listen to that man behind the curtain. Go ahead.
Steve, last time you said you had a rig blaster. Is that correct?
Had a rig blaster or a wig blaster?
No, JC, I do not.
Oh, well, there's N2PPN that I was talking to. You guys meld together after a while. We were talking about digital modes.
Only digital mode I know is Sister Mary and her five fingers.
That's just in time for the holidays. Then it was Steve. What do you use for digital mode?
Sister Mary and her five fingers.
Oh, you mean the DMR radios that I have? I have a Hytera HD and a Motorola HD.
No, for PSK31 or RTTY.
Oh, God.
Oh, I have an old AEA PK232, which was like a multi-mode controller. Old, though. I'd say early 90s vintage.
Okay, because I was trying to get the rig blaster to work, but I do not believe that it's getting any audio from the 8-pin jack on the ICOM 718.
Oh, okay. I know there was a certain... They have some setups that you have to do, settings, I should say. But that was with the 232 from what I remember. Believe me, I don't remember a whole lot about it. But I know you had a settings program and you had to input, you know, obviously special settings for the PK232 to keep the radio. So I don't know if you've done that.
From the instruction manual, you had to jump on the jumpers, and then you had to shunt a few, I forget what they're called, but I have that all correct, so I guess it just may not work. I was wondering if when you plug headphones into the audio out, should you be able to hear what your announcing that you had a rig blaster, but all right. I guess back to the Walking Dead conversation you guys were having.
The only thing I remember is that there was a light on the PK-232 that showed, you know, noise going to it. It was like an indicator light. But like I said, it's been a long time since I've used the darn thing, so I'm really going to the back of the memory banks, which are not working too well these days. Sorry. I'm sure there'll be somebody around that still plays with it. Like I said, that's all old school stuff. Well, not old school. It's 20 years old. That's what I think I had told you last time.
Yeah, you did, but I figured let me tinker around with it. The software is pretty easy to use. DLDG, I think it's called. So, it's just a matter of getting the input from an older radio into the sound card of the actual unit.
Like I said, it might be a setting that's off, just clicking on one setting that's not letting it receive. Anyway, sorry. Rich, I wanted to mention to you, I bought new expensive windshield wipers, and I can actually see outside now.
I bought a pair of those winter wiper blades with the rubber condom over the bridges and frames, and that's pretty cool stuff, because I always used to have a problem with my windshield wipers icing up, you know, and since I don't have the heated windshield like the Subaru, you know, my windshield wipers, you know, would tend to get a little frosty, and then I'd have to stop the car and smack them against the window and smack them against my head and stick them 16.5-inch long wiper blades bomb in my eyeball and give myself a lobotomy, you know, stuff like that.
Terrible stuff. I busted them up in the snowstorm that we had, the big one. But it was the passenger side that got ripped up. Not so bad on the driver's side. But yeah, that particular storm, a lot of people went through windshield wipers because it was just piling up on the plates. Anyway, I bought the Rain-X ones, the Super Duper, they actually work. Anyway, I just throw that in there. You can never, and does your car have two different sizes? Also, I have a 24 and an 18. They're not the same size. They're different sizes.
Yes. Cars have two different sizes. JC, do yours have two different sizes?
I have a trifecta going. I have a rear hatch, very expensive little wiper that I have not figured out how to replace yet.
I guess when it's scratching the glass on the rear window, that's when we'll figure it out.
No scratching yet, but I know that eventually I will have to replace it. And I think the last time I checked was $30. I feel it's too expensive.
Cheaper than a new rear piece of glass.
You could buy them online probably for less money.
That's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to see if they have it on eBay. And then I'm going to see if they have a YouTube video on how to, and do it myself.
I think they only have two methods. One's got the hook, and the other one has got the snap arm on it. So, I don't remember what kind of car you're driving. I have the hook type.
Mine's covered, so there may be a trick to get the cover off and then to unhook it or clip it or touch the little plunger hookup. Who knows? It's a Kia soul.
You might have to replace the whole arm and everything in one.
$70. But they said 30. So I am going to take a wild guess that it's just a wiper.
Cookie, when I did the brakes yesterday, I was thinking about the Corvette. I should really do the rears. I did not do those initially. I put new calipers in the front also. The backs look good, but I should really do new pads at least.
Go. There you go. We took the Subaru up to get it looked at, getting looked at today. I had a squeaky idler wheel on my front serpentine belt, so they said to bring it up, and they'll look at it today. So it's even going to get saved from the last bit of salt on the road till next year, so that's cool. So Shu Must Be Feared has the Toxic Avenger today.